Chapter 51. Prax. Prax ran. Around him, the station walls formed angles at the center to make an elongated hexagon. The gravity was barely higher than Ganymede's standard, and after weeks at a full G burn, Prax had to pay attention to keep himself from rising to the ceiling with each step. Amos loped beside him, every stride low, long, and fast. The shotgun in the man's hands remained perfectly level. At a T-intersection ahead, a woman appeared. Dark hair and skin. Not the one who'd taken May. Her eyes went wide and she darted off. "They know we're coming," Prax said. He was panting a little.
"That probably wasn't their first clue, Doc," Amos said.
His voice was perfectly conversational, but there was an intensity in it. Something like anger. At the intersection, they paused, Prax leaning over and resting elbows on knees to catch his breath. It was an old, primitive reflex. In less than 0.2G, the blood return wasn't significantly increased by putting his head even with his heart. Strictly speaking, he would have been better off standing and keeping his posture from narrowing any of his blood vessels. He forced himself to stand.
"Where should I plug in this radio link for Naomi?" he asked Amos.
Amos shrugged and pointed at the wall.
"Maybe we can just follow the signs instead."
There was a legend on the wall with colored arrows pointing in different directions. ENV control and cafeteria and primary lab. Amos tapped primary lab with the barrel of his shotgun.
"Sounds good to me," Prax said. "You good to go?"
"I am," Prax said, though he probably wasn't. The floor seemed to shift under him, followed immediately by a long, ominous rumbling that he could feel in the soles of his feet.
"Naomi, you there?"
"I am. I have to keep track of the captain on the other line. I might pop in and out. Everything all right?"
"Might be stretching the point," Amos said. "We got something sounded like someone shooting at us. They ain't shooting at the base, are they?"
"They aren't," Naomi said from the ship, her voice pressed thin and tinny by the attenuated signal. "It looks like some of the locals are mounting a defense, but so far our Marines aren't returning fire."
"Tell them to calm that shit down," Amos said.
But he was already moving down the corridor toward the primary lab. Prax jumped after him, misjudged, and cracked his arm against the ceiling.
"Soon as they ask me," Naomi said.
The corridors were a maze, but it was the kind of maze Prax had been running through his whole life. The institutional logic of a research facility was the same everywhere. The floor plans were different. Budget concerns could change how richly appointed the details were. The fields being supported determined what equipment was present. But the soul of the place was the same. And it was Prax's home. Twice more they caught sight of people scattering through the halls with them. The first was a young Belter woman in a white lab coat. The second was a massively obese, dark-skinned man with a squat build of Earth. He was wearing a crisp suit, the signature of the administrative class everywhere. Neither one tried to stop them, so Prax forgot about them almost as soon as he saw them. The imaging suite was behind a set of negative pressure seals. When Prax and Amos went through, the gust of air seemed to push them faster, urging them on. The rumble came again, louder this time and lasting almost 15 seconds. It could be fighting. It could be a volcano forming nearby. No way to know. Prax knew this base would have to have been built with tectonic instability in mind. He wondered what the safeguards were for a moment, then put it out of his mind. Nothing he could do about it, anyway. The lab's imaging suite was at least the equal of the one he'd shared on Ganymede, with everything from the spidery full resonance displays to the inferential gravity lens. In the corner, a squat, orange table showed a holographic image of a colony of rapidly dividing cells. Two doors led out, apart from the one they'd come through. Somewhere nearby, People were shouting at each other. Prax pointed at one of the doors. "This one," he said. "Look at the hinges. It's built to allow a gurney through." The passageway on the other side was warmer, and the air was more humid. It wasn't quite greenhouse level, but near to it. It opened into a long gallery with 5-meter ceilings. Fitted tracks on the ceiling and floor allowed for moving high-mass equipment and containment cages. Bays lined it, each, it seemed, with a research bench not so different from the ones Prax had used as an undergraduate. Smart table, wall display, inventory control box, specimen cages. The shouting voices were louder now. He was about to say as much, but Amos shook his head and pointed down the gallery toward one of the farther bays. A man's voice came from that direction, his tone high and tight and angry. "Not an evacuation if there's no place to evacuate to," he was saying. "I'm not giving up the one bargaining chip I have left." "You don't have that option," a woman said. "Put the gun down and let's talk this through. I've been handling you for 7 years and I will keep you in business for 7 more, but you do not..." "Are you delusional? You think there's a tomorrow after this?" Amos pointed forward with his shotgun, then began a slow, deliberate advance. Prax followed, trying to be silent. It had been months since he'd heard Dr. Strickland's voice, but the shouting man could be him. It was possible. "Let me make this perfectly clear," the man said. "We have nothing. Nothing. The only hope of negotiation is if we have a card to play. That means them. Why do you think they're alive?" "Carlos," the woman said as Prax came to the corner of the bay, "we can have this conversation later. There's a hostile enemy force on the base right now, and if you're still here when they come through that hatch..."
"Yeah," Amos interrupted. "What happens then?"
The bay was just like the others. Strickland, it was unmistakably Strickland, stood beside a gray metal transport crate that went from the floor to just above his hip. In the specimen cages, a half dozen children lay motionless, sleeping or drugged. Strickland also had a small gun in his hand, pointed at the woman from the video. She was in a harshly cut uniform, the sort of thing that security forces adopted to make their staff look hard and intimidating. It worked for her. "We came in the other hatch," Prax said, pointing back over his shoulder.
"Da?"
One syllable, spoken softly. It rang out from the transport cart, louder than all the weeks of explosions and Gauss rounds and screams of the wounded and dying. Prax couldn't breathe. He couldn't move. He wanted to tell them all to put the guns away, to be careful. There was a child. His child. Strickland's pistol barked, and some sort of high-explosive round destroyed the woman's neck and face in a spray of blood and cartilage. She tried to scream once, but with significant portions of her larynx already compromised, what she managed was more of a powerful, wet exhalation. Amos lifted the shotgun, but Strickland, Marion, whatever his name was, put his pistol on top of the crate and seemed almost to sag with relief. The woman drifted to the floor, blood and flesh fanning out and falling gently to the ground like a blanket of red lace.
"Thank God you came," the doctor said. "Oh, thank God you came. I was stalling her as long as I could. Dr. Mung, I can't imagine how hard this has been for you. I am so, so sorry."
Prax stepped forward. The woman took another jerking breath, her nervous system firing at random now. Strickland smiled at him, the same reassuring smile he recognized from any number of doctor's visits over the previous years. Prax found the transport's control pad and knelt to open it. The side panel clicked as the magnetic locks gave up their grip. The panel rolled up, disappearing into the cart's frame. For a terrible, breathless moment, it was the wrong girl. She had the black, lustrous hair, the egg-brown skin. She could have been May's older sister. And then the child moved. It wasn't much more than shifting her head, but it was all that his brain needed to see his baby in this older girl's body. All the months on Ganymede, all the weeks to Tycho and back, she'd been growing up without him. "She's so big," he said. "She's grown so much." May frowned, tiny ridges popping into being just above her brow. It made her look like Nicola. And then her eyes opened. They were blank and empty. Prax yanked at the release on his helmet and lifted it off. The station air smelled vaguely of sulfur and copper. May's gaze fastened on him, and she smiled. "Da," she said again, and put out one hand. When he reached for her, she took his finger in her fist and pulled herself into his arms. He held her to his chest, the warmth and mass of her small body, no longer tiny, only small, was overwhelming. The void between the stars was smaller than May was at that moment. "She's sedated," Strickland said, "but her health is perfect. Her immune system has been performing at peak." "My baby," Prax said. "My perfect girl." May's eyes were closed, but she smiled and made a small, animal grunt of satisfaction. "I can't tell you how sorry I am for all this," Strickland said. "If I had any way of reaching you, of telling you what was happening, I swear to you I would have. This has been beyond a nightmare." "So, you're saying they kept you prisoner here?" Amos asked. "Almost all the technical staff was here against their will," Strickland said. "When we signed on, we were promised resources and freedom of a kind most of us had only dreamed about. When I started, I thought I could make a real difference. I was terribly, terribly wrong, and I will never be able to apologize enough." Prax's blood was singing. A warmth spread from the center of his body, radiating out to his hands and feet. It was like being dosed with the most perfect euphoric in the history of pharmacy. Her hair smelled like the cheap lab shampoo he'd used to wash dogs in the laboratories of his youth. He stood too quickly, and her mass and momentum pulled him a few centimeters off the floor. His knees and feet were slick, and it took him a moment to realize he'd been kneeling in blood. "What happened to these kids? Are there others somewhere else?" Amos asked. "These are the only ones I was able to save. They've all been sedated for evacuation," Strickland said. "But right now we need to leave. Get off the station. I have to get to the authorities." "And why do you need to do that?" Amos asked. "I have to tell them what's been going on here," Strickland said. "I have to tell everyone about the crimes that were committed here." "Yeah, okay," Amos said. "Hey, Prax, you think you could get that?" He pointed his shotgun at something on a nearby crate. Prax turned to look at Amos. It was almost a struggle to remember where he was and what they were doing. "Oh," he said, "sure." Holding May against him with one arm, he took Strickland's gun and trained it on the man. "No," Strickland said. You don't understand. I'm the victim here. I had to do all this. They forced me. She forced me." "You know," Amos said, "maybe I'm coming across as what a guy like you might call working class. Doesn't mean I'm stupid. You're one of Protogen's pet sociopaths, and I ain't buying any damn thing you're trying to sell." Strickland's face turned to cold rage like a mask had fallen away. "Protogen's dead," he said. "There is no Protogen." "Yeah," Amos said. "I got the brand name wrong. That's the problem here." May murmured something, her hand reaching out behind Prax's ear to grip his hair. Strickland stepped back, his hands in fists. "I saved her," he said. "That girl's alive because of me. She was slated for the second generation units, and I pulled her off the project. I pulled all of them. If it wasn't for me, every child here would be worse than dead right now. Worse than dead.
It was the broadcast, wasn't it? Prax said. You saw that we might find out, so you wanted to make sure that you had the girl from the screen. The one everyone was looking for.
You'd rather I hadn't? Strickland said. It was still me that saved her.
Actually, I think that makes it Captain Holden, Prax said. But I take your point.
Strickland's pistol had a simple thumb switch on the back. He pressed it to turn the safety on.
My home is gone, Prax said, speaking slowly. My job is gone. Most of the people I've ever known are either dead or scattered through the system. A major government is saying I abuse women and children. I've had more than 80 explicit death threats from absolute strangers in the last month. And you know what? I don't care.
Strickland licked his lips, his eyes shifting from Prax to Amos and back again.
I don't need to kill you, Prax said. I have my daughter back. Revenge isn't important to me.
Strickland took a deep breath and let it out slowly. Prax could see the man's body relax, and something on the dividing line of relief and pleasure appeared at the corners of his mouth. May twitched once when Amos's auto shotgun fired, but she lay back down against Prax's shoulder without crying or looking around. Strickland's body drifted slowly to the ground, the arms falling to the sides. The space where the head had been gouted bright arterial blood against the walls, each pulse smaller than the one before. Amos shrugged.
Or that, Prax said. So, you got any ideas how we...
The hatch behind them opened and a man ran in.
What happened? I heard...
Amos raised the auto shotgun. The new man backpedaled, a thin whine of fear escaping from him as he retreated. Amos cleared his throat.
Any idea how we get these kids out of here?
Putting May back in the transport cart was one of the hardest things Prax had ever done. He wanted to carry her against him, to press his face against hers. It was a primate reaction, the deepest centers of his brain longing for the reassurance of physical contact. But his suit wouldn't protect her from the radiation or near vacuum of Io's sulfuric atmosphere, and the transport would. He nestled her gently against two other children while Amos put the other four in a second cart. The smallest of them was still in newborn diapers. Prax wondered if she had come from Ganymede too. The carts glided against the station flooring, only rattling when they crossed the built-in tracks.
You remember how to get back to the surface? Amos asked.
I think so, Prax said.
Doc, you really want to put your helmet back on.
Oh, right, thank you. At the T-intersection, half a dozen men in security uniforms had built a barricade, preparing to defend the lab against attack. Because Amos tossed in his grenades from the rear, the cover was less effective than the locals had anticipated. But it still took a few minutes to clear the bodies and the remains of the barricade to let the carts roll through. There was a time, Prax knew, that the violence would have bothered him. Not the blood or bodies. He'd spent more than enough time doing dissections and even autonomous limb vivisection to be able to wall off what he was seeing from any particular sense of visceral horror. But that it was something done in anger, that the men and women he'd just seen blown apart hadn't donated their bodies or tissues, would have affected him once. The universe had taken that from him, and he couldn't say now exactly when it had happened. Part of him was numb, and maybe it always would be. There was a feeling of loss in that, but it was intellectual. The only emotions he felt were a glowing, transforming relief that May was here and alive, and a vicious animal protectiveness that meant he would never let her leave his sight,
possibly until she left for university. On the surface, the transports were rougher, the wheels less suited to the uneven surface of the land. Prax followed Amos's example, turning the boxes around to pull them rather than push. Looking at the vectors, it made sense, but it wouldn't have occurred to him if he hadn't seen Amos doing it. Bobby was walking slowly toward the Rocinante. Her suit was charred and stained and moving poorly. A clear fluid was leaking down the back.
"Don't get close to me," she said. "I've got protomolecule goo all over this thing."
"That's bad," Amos said. "You got a way to clean that off?"
"Not really," she replied. "How'd the extraction go?"
"Got enough kids to start a singing group, but a little shy of a baseball team," Amos said.
"May's here," Prax said. "She's all right."
"I'm glad to hear that," Bobby said. And even though she was clearly exhausted, she sounded like she meant it. At the airlock, Amos and Prax got in and nestled the transports against the back wall while Bobby stood on the rough ground outside. Prax checked the transport indicators. There was enough onboard air to last another 40 minutes.
"All right," Amos said. "We're ready."
"Going for emergency blow," Bobby said, and her armored suit came apart around her. It was a strange sight, the hard curves and layers of combat plate peeling themselves back, blooming out like a flower and then falling apart, and the woman, eyes closed and mouth open, being revealed. When she put her hand out for Amos to pull her in, the gesture reminded Prax of May seeing him again.
"Now, Doc," Amos said.
"Cycling," Prax said. He closed the outer door and started fresh air coming into the lock. 10 seconds later, Bobby's chest started to pump like a bellows. 30 seconds, and they were at 7/8 of an atmosphere.
"Where do we stand, guys?" Naomi asked as Prax opened the transport.
The children were all asleep. May was sucking on her first 2 fingers the way she had when she was a baby. He couldn't get past how much older she looked.
"We're solid," Amos said. "I say we get the fuck out of here and glass the place."
"Eh, fucking men,"
Avasarla's voice said in the background.
"Copy that," Naomi said. "We're prepping for launch. Let me know when you've got all your new passengers safely in."
Prax pulled off his helmet and sat beside Bobby. In the black sheath of her base garments, she looked like someone just coming back from the gym. She could have been anybody.
"Glad you got your kid back," she said.
"Thank you. I'm sorry you lost the suit," he said. She shrugged. "At this point, it was mostly a metaphor anyway," she said. And the inner airlock opened.
"Cycle's done, Naomi," Amos said. "We're home."